Good morning, my dear brothers and sisters. I think one of the most useful and cost-effective inventions from the last century was the digital camera. They started to become freely available to consumers around about the mid-1990s, and now everybody has one, whether it's a dedicated camera or simply part of your mobile phone. Even if you're not a keen photographer, it's so handy, isn't it, to be able to snap a picture at a minute's notice, not just for selfies. Might be a beautiful sunset, it might be at a family function, or it might be something very practical like taking a photo of a notice on the board so we've got the details. The great thing about the digital camera is you know straight away what you've got. If you don't like it, you just delete it. If you like it, but it needs to be edited a bit, you've got plenty of software available to do that. Prior to the digital camera, though, photography was not so easy. You used to have to buy film. Thanks to Brother Lloyd for digging this out. I haven't seen one of these for ages. Little film of cartridge. And they weren't cheap to buy either. You put it in your camera, you'd wind it on, and once it was ready to go, had to be very careful when you took your photo to get the light just right and the focus, otherwise you'd ruin the shot. And there was no such thing as automatic back then. You had to work it out yourself. People had light meters and all sorts of stuff. When the roll was finished, you had to wind it back into this cartridge and then send it away to be processed. And that wasn't cheap either. There was no opportunity to review the shots. You had no idea what the quality was like until you got them back. Excuse me. So this is a 24 shot roll. Out of the 24 shots, you might get 15 good ones and the rest were rubbish. You get your packet of prints back, and then tucked into the back of the packet were the negatives, which is basically just the exposed film. And if there was a particular shot that you liked, you could take the negative back to the processor, the developer, and ask them to print you off some more, which again cost money. But this idea of processing a negative to come up with a positive that I want to talk about today. And if you're wondering, that's Mike when he was about four. So, everybody has problems of some sort that they're dealing with. The more we get to know each other, the more we find out, and the more opportunity there is for us to provide support in various ways. From maybe just lending an ear, right through to physically working alongside each other. And each of us, from time to time, can get into a negative thought pattern. We just can't see any end to the difficulty, whatever it is. And I've heard on a number of occasions that when we're in that headspace, brothers and sisters coming up to us with the best of intentions, quoting verses, isn't helpful. We just can't take it on board. So how then do we turn a negative into a positive? Because the turnaround has to come from within. We can't control all the events in our lives, all the things that happen to us externally, The only thing we can control is how we react to it. Are we given any guidance about this in Scripture? Well, I think we are, and I want to go through a few scriptural examples. First one being Joshua and the children of Israel. And Brother Adam talked about this on Wednesday night. They just enjoyed a stunning victory in Jericho. And full of confidence, they turned to the much less imposing town of Ai, the next one in their conquest. And in a complete turnaround, they are defeated by the people of Ai, and they retreat in disarray. Joshua and the elders of Israel throw themselves face down to the ground before the ark. Joshua 1 verse 10. But the Lord said to Joshua, "Get up. Why are you lying on your face like this?" And he's then told about the sin of Achan and what needed to be done to resolve the problem. But the point is, Joshua was looking the wrong way. He was looking down instead of up. God wanted him looking up to him for help. Then there's the example of Elijah. He just enjoyed a stunning victory over the prophets of Baal, only to have Jezebel tell him, "You're dead." He flees for his life, and after the strengthening help of angels, he makes it to Mount Sinai and he hides in a cave. 1 Kings 19, verse 9. But the Lord said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And we know the story about the storm, the earthquake, the fire, and then the still small voice. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" God didn't want Elijah hiding in a dark cave. He wanted him out in the light, looking up to God for help. Sometimes we can go into a dark place, can't we? And that's not where God wants us to be, least of all because he loves us and he doesn't want us to be there. We know from some of the Psalms that David went through periods of despair. He'd been anointed by Samuel as king over Israel. Yet here he was, hiding out in mountains and caves with Saul, determined to kill him. And on a number of occasions, people wanting to curry favour with the king betrayed David and made his life even more difficult. He must have been wondering, "Well, if I'm supposed to be the king of Israel, why is this happening?" In Psalm 57, we read of David's distress at this particular point in his life. Verse 6, "They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path." But as we know, with David, he always manages to end up on a positive note. He turns the negative into a positive. And the end of Psalm 57 ends like this: "I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love, reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies." That was how David chose to react to his situation. It could have been vastly different, couldn't it? We wouldn't blame him if he went and sat in a corner and just started rocking. But that's not how David was. That's not his character. No wonder he is given the title a man after God's own heart. In the New Testament, when Jesus was first arrested The disciples all deserted him. They couldn't see past their current lives, and the danger being around Jesus was to them. However, once he'd risen and appeared to them, they received that much needed boost to their faith, and from then on, nothing stopped them from preaching the gospel message, even though in many cases it cost them their lives, because they knew there was something better. We know the story of doubting Thomas when finally Jesus appears to him from John chapter 20. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And that's us, brothers and sisters. The question is, how deep does that belief go? Because when we're in a dark place and we're trying to turn a negative into a positive, it's about how deep is that belief. Jesus summed it up very nicely when he told the parable of the house built on rock. From Matthew chapter 7. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock." Now we note in this parable, Jesus isn't promising an easy life. He says, the rain will fall, the streams will rise, the wind will blow and beat against the house, so much so that it potentially could collapse. But it didn't collapse because the foundations were solid. So we need to ask ourselves, me included, how deep are our foundations? Because when we hit difficult times, that's the bit that starts to get shaky. If we really believe that this life is only temporary, then it starts to become possible to turn a negative into a positive. If we really believe that God is in control, that his angels are encamped around us, and that his only aim is to see us into his kingdom, then our problems, the things, the negatives that we're facing, can start to take on a different perspective. And once that alternative perspective arrives, then there are Bible verses that really do help. Hebrews 13 verse 5. "Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, 'Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you.'" That is a direct quote from Deuteronomy 31 verse 6. When Moses was exhorting the people just before they entered the promised land, they were to face battles against the heathen. And he says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you." And I think those words, "be strong and courageous," are just as applicable for us today with all the problems that we see both in our lives and in the world around us. Because really, it's only with God on our side that we can face this world with a different attitude. 1 Peter 5, verses 6 and 7. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. God will lift us up, brothers and sisters, in due time. Now, I know it's easy for me to stand here and say these things, and I'm no better than anybody else when it comes to dealing with problems. But hopefully, all of us have those deep foundations that keep us strong in our time of need. And let's never forget, we also have each other to fall back on, to talk to help each other. The whole reason for forming ecclesias right back from the first century was because two are better than one, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. The bottom line, brothers and sisters, is we believe this life is not the main event, even though sometimes it feels like it. No matter how intense things might be, this life is just an audition for the one to come. And if we can really believe that, then we can face anything. I'd like to use the old role of film as an allegory for us. I said before it wasn't cheap. Well, we've been bought with a price, haven't we? We were remembering the price that was paid today. Speaking of his work, Jesus said, "I have come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness." John 12:46. We were all in darkness, brothers and sisters, but each of us, frame by frame, has been taken out of darkness and exposed to the glorious light of the gospel. And we are currently in the process of being developed. Now again, there can be a price to pay for that development, but once the process is complete, the negative that now exists, this sinful mortal body, subject to all sorts of physical and mental aches and pains, will be turned into a beautiful positive. Never again to experience the problems of this life, to be energized forever by the Spirit of God. So let us now remember the price that has been paid and be thankful to both God and Jesus for making it possible to turn a negative into a positive.